Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. Take the sky from me. There's no place I can see since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City, where the stench of corruption is becoming absolutely overwhelming.
And this is Tex, broadcasting from high above Houston, Texas, in the Crystal Cathedral, as always. And we once again are here to discuss the future of the conservative movement, which may or may not involve the Republican Party, because there are people within it who are doing their best to ruin the last vestiges of what holds the Republican Party together. But I will turn it over to you, Rex, to set up our agenda for the evening.
Well, I think that intro on your part was spot on, Tex. The title of tonight's show is Libido Dominandi, which is Latin for the lust to dominate or the lust for power. And that's about the only thing I can think of to explain why those who have been entrusted with leadership of the conservative movement, especially under the grand old party Republican brand name, have squandered what Reagan and Gingrich handed them and what Ron Paul has been championing for 40 years, because I can only assume that they just want positions of power and money without any consideration for principle. And, you know, chief amongst them, I would say, would be, you know, a little Karl Rover. And I think what we're going to address tonight is understanding this lust for power and why it puts principle to the back burner and position, honor, money, and privilege on the front. And I also want to address it in the sense of our own personal lust for power. It's a sin we're all prone to, and I'm seeing it amongst people who should be fighting on principle together for the cause of liberty, conservatism, the Constitution. And instead, we are seeking to dominate each other and nitpick against each other over the most insignificant little issues, sowing division. And as we beat up on each other, we're allowing the oligarchs, the enemy, and those who want to destroy conservatism free reign. And I think that's a mistake. Wouldn't you agree with that, Tex?
Absolutely. I mean, nobody agrees with anyone 100%. You only agree with yourself 100%, and you yourself contradict yourself from time to time, if not more frequently. So there's got to be nobody that you agree with 100%, but you have to unite around a common set of goals and figure that you have people who are supporters of your main overriding goal, and you will have differences. And once you take care of that major goal, then you can start talking about the differences. But to nitpick things ahead of time, well, you'll never form an alliance that way. And so going after one another because they have this opinion on this issue or that issue is never a path to success. So the main thing right now, I would think, is that the leadership or the, quote, leadership of the Republican Party has proven over the course of this last election that they don't know what the hell they're doing, but they seem to be raking in a lot of money doing it. And now they're intent on doing it again, but getting an earlier start at failure by stopping any conservative or Tea Party candidates from getting elected and essentially handing the Republican Party over to the D.C. establishment to determine who your candidates are going to be and make the act of participating completely useless and, you know, just completely secondary to the overall cause that they are supporting while they take out your candidates before you even get a chance to decide whether or not you want to vote for them because they're trying to take them out before they even announce their candidacies.
Yeah, and, you know, our little buddy there, Karl Rover, has set up a project to do just that, and it's got the Orwellian name of the Conservative Victory Project when it really is the Conservative Purging Project, because Rove doesn't want conservatives around. The guy's never been a conservative. He's never championed any conservatives, and he's certainly not conservative now. And yet there are so many people out there who are conservative, Republican, constitutionalists, who still think that this guy is some kind of, you know, architectural genius in devising, you know, winning victories. I mean, look, the first time that we heard about him was when he was, George Bush's brain. In 2000? That wasn't a very good election. Was it a strong victory for the new compassionate conservatism tax?
Well, the best part about this is that it's named the Victory Fund. When his America Crossroads and Crossroads GPS had such a staggering record of failure, I think they lost every single race they supported in 2012. So to call it the Conservative Victory Fund, you have to realize Karl Rove is using that term with a sense of irony and humor. they originally were going to put the word victory in quotes, but they thought that that would be too obvious, so they removed the quotes. But yeah, it will be a conservative quote victory, like the crushing victory that Mitt Romney won in November against Barack Obama.
Yeah, Mitt Romney. I mean, I'm just so sick of having to bring up that guy's name, but he's just the perfect example of what's been wrong with the Republican Party specifically and conservatism in general. The title of today's show was taken from St. Augustine of Hippo, who was writing at the time of the fall of the last great global empire, that of Rome. And he wrote a book, you know, The City of God, which is a theological treatise, but he also addresses the city of man. And he's saying that the city of man is more or less ruled by the lust to dominate. And, you know, if we get introspective, we realize that we all have a tendency to do this. I mean, I know for a fact, especially when I don the BTR microphone, I'm prepared to be right and revel in being right rather than necessarily seeking truth. And we all have that tendency. And knowing that we have that tendency is the first step towards reconciling it. Karl Rove does not know that he has that tendency. And his idea of being right is that his candidates win and he gets paid large sums of money. He doesn't care what they win on or what they do when they win, as long as they can keep winning. Now, if everybody is just interested in the Republican Party beating the Democrats by any means necessary with any candidate possible, then you're basically a party without a purpose. You are a party that does not adhere to its platform. There are other parties that do adhere to their platforms, but they're, you know, blocked out by this corrupt duopoly. So we have to understand these mechanisms to know how they work, and we also have to understand that this mechanism exists within what, with a large paintbrush, and it's a difficult label, I would paint as constitutional conservatives. But that is a difficult thing to get our breath around, because some people consider themselves, you know, libertarians, others consider themselves conservatarians, others consider themselves Christian values voters. I don't know. But this is the big tent coalition that Reagan was able to put together and that Gingrich was able to propel into the first majority victory in the People's House in over 60 years. And it's fragmenting now along the lines of, oh, I don't like those Ron Paul people. They're pot-smoking hippie crazies, and oh, we don't like those regular Republicans. You know, they wear khaki pants and blue blazers and walk around like they got a stick up their ass. Well, you know what? Learn to get along, because if you actually love the Constitution, which is what a conservative should be, I mean, let's face it, and we've defined this a zillion times on these airways, and I really hope you understand it and can share it to others. If you're truly a conservative, then you seek to conserve the principles of liberty and natural law that are codified in what at the time would be considered liberal documents, the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution chiefly. Now, why liberal? Well, because at the time those were liberal propositions, and now we seek to conserve them. And the thing to keep in mind is that that's the classic definition of liberal, which is what is often used since the leftist, collectivist, statist, corporatist losers picked up the mantle of progressive and then appropriated the term liberal. Not modern liberals, classical liberals of the modern era, would use the term libertarian. But that can also be confusing because, Tex, there is a Libertarian Party with a capital L, and then there are libertarians, and then there are libertarians. And, you know, maybe you want to get into the whole false left-right paradigm, but the fact is that libertarians run the gamut from left to right, depending on how liberal they are on the so-called social issues and how liberal they are on the so-called economic issues. And I would argue that Ron Paul, who's basically put libertarianism, so to speak, on the map, Ron Paul is a conservative libertarian, if we're going to paint him with that brush, where Gary Johnson would be a more leftist or liberal libertarian. And I think people need to understand
this. But still a Republican.
but still a Republican. Exactly. Well, because, I mean, there's no quarter for libertarianism in the Democrats. The only thing they may agree on is smoking pot. And by the way, just let's just take that as an example, Tex, because, I think you and I saw this a lot whenever, as we were trying to help Newt Gingrich and also Ron Paul get to the brokered convention this past year. You know, whenever we would bring up Ron Paul in, quote, traditional Republican circles, the first thing they would go to is, well, they want to smoke pot. I mean, as if that was a fucking important issue in this last race. We got $16 trillion in debt, unending wars, you know, socialist in the White House for 4 years, and we have to talk about, you know, whether you should or should not be allowed to smoke pot. It's just insane. But let's be clear about that. You can be a libertarian and not think that legalizing mind-altering substances is a good idea. You can be a libertarian and think that everybody has a right to do with their body what they want. The idea is, again, that if you truly understand it, it's about the diffusion of power. And that is, I think, the key point. And it is the only, other than, you know, morality, theology, religion, grace, it is the only secular, practical tool that we have at our disposal to check the libido dominandi, the lust for power. Because in a diffused power situation, those who truly seek to dominate won't find any attraction in seeking those offices for honors and money because it wouldn't be there. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, the beauty of the Constitution was to set power against power and to set ambition against ambition so that they eventually would neutralize each other. Someone once said to me in Washington that the sum total of all work in Washington at the end of the day is zero, because one person is trying to do something and there's a group trying to stop him from doing that. Now, unfortunately, that sounds nice, but it's not really true, because they've been doing too much, and what they've been doing is working together to increase the power of Washington vis-a-vis the rest of the country. And now that's extended to basically creating a council of guardians, to borrow a terminology from Iran, to oversee who the candidates can be. So first, your candidates have to get through the Council of Guardians, which is coming to you now in the form of Karl Rove's conservative victory campaign, or whatever he's calling it. And they will choose the candidates that you can select from, because they want to make sure that no matter which one you choose, you're going to choose another rhino. And speaking of Ron Paul not being a real conservative and being a libertarian and him being, you know, something that's wrong with the party, I would point out that this is Tom Paukin, who was once chairman of the Texas Republican Party. He also ran for Congress in 76 and 1980. And he served in the Ronald Reagan presidential transition team in 1980 as well. And he said of Karl Rove that Karl Rove campaigned in 1980 against Ronald Reagan and for George Herbert Walker Bush in the Republican presidential primary in Texas. So Karl Rove has a long history of backing the wrong horse in these contests, and I would not go so far to say that he is very conservative at all. He was not on board with the Ronald Reagan revolution that was coming along. Now, he could say, well, I thought George Bush was the most electable, but I think that 1984 proved quite easily that Ronald Reagan was ultimately the most electable, and now he is spoken of with great fawning praise, even by people on the left, although probably begrudgingly. But he was wrong about that contest, just as he's wrong, I believe, about what he's doing now, because if you look at the candidates that they have supported in 2012, they point to, oh, my God, these Tea Party people, they came out and they voted for somebody that I didn't tell them to. And that really is what the cardinal sin is. You can't, as a member of your state, you don't have free will to go out and pick who you think would best serve the interests of your state. You have to wait for Karl Rove to tell you who would serve the best interests of your state. And they point to always Christine O'Donnell's run, which was in 2010, but they still point to that. And then they point most recently to Aiken and Murdoch in Missouri and Indiana to say that, look, see, these Tea Party people, they can't win. We've got three Tea Partiers who didn't make it through, right? Now, here's their record. So this is the 2012 record for the presidential election. So these are handpicked candidates by Karl Rove that they basically foisted upon the American people or the Republican voter and said, you have to vote for these guys. Josh Mandel of Ohio, Tommy Thompson of Wisconsin, Connie Mack of Florida, Denny Rayberg of Montana, Rick Berg of North Dakota, George Allen of Virginia, Linda McMahon of Connecticut, Charlie Summers of Maine, Pete Hoekstra of Michigan, Joe Krilos of New Jersey, Scott Brown of Massachusetts. All these guys lost. These were all backed by Karl Rove. These are all left-leaning conservatives. So I would say you can point to some Tea Party failures, but you can point to a larger playing field of Republican establishment failure candidates, and that really is the problem, is that RINOs can't win because conservatives don't support them. And Karl Rove thinks that if you get enough R's in Congress, then you can start doing things that benefit the R's. The problem is, what do they do when they get into Congress? They begin to govern like Democrats. And what Tea Partiers and conservatives and libertarians are trying to say is, we don't want that kind of governance. It doesn't matter to us which team wins. It matters to us who gets in office and how they govern. And for Karl Rove, it's just a simple matter of, how do I assemble a team that can get more R's in Congress so that the R's benefit from this corrupt political system that we have going on, or from the distribution of largesse to your clients, namely your big donors, so that we can be the ones doling out the money. Well, that's not really the type of government the conservatives or Tea Partiers are asking for, or libertarians. But he doesn't care about that, because what he wants is to get the big contracts for the big elections and to be the kingmaker, not just in picking the presidential candidate or the presidential nominee for the Republican Party, but picking the candidates in every single state in the union, all the way down to the district level if he could.
Yeah, because he wants power. He wants power, and he wants privilege, and he wants money. The principles don't matter to him. And I just want to clarify one thing to people who may not have be as familiar with Tex and Rex. Libertarian does not necessarily refer to the Libertarian Party. What it really means is someone who and look, there's three aspects to it, and this is kind of important, because part of our lust for power is to dominate everybody else who doesn't agree with us on everything, okay? And that's just a surefire way to stay divided and get bowled over by those with money. Because you know, as we witnessed with the Gingrich campaign, and to some degree the Paul campaign, there's money in politics, and money can win if it's an advertising or popularity contest. But there is something that ultimately has to be motivated, and that is people. And both Gingrich and Paul were running on people power, not money power, because neither one of them had that much money. Gingrich even less so than Paul. So let's understand that it is ultimately up to you, no matter how corrupt the system is. At some point, it does rely on the consent of the governed. And you can consent in a couple of different ways. You can consent by doing nothing, or you can consent by accepting something that you would otherwise not want. And that's the huge, huge mistake. And what you really need to do is grow a pair and do what needs to be done when faced with it. Now, libertarianism has, we can really break it down politically into three aspects, Tex. I think we can break it down into political libertarianism, economic libertarianism, and social libertarianism. Economic libertarianism is pretty much just free market economics as championed by the Austrian School of Economics, and I'm fairly confident that anybody who calls themselves a libertarian or a conservative would have absolutely no disagreement on the fact that we want a free market in this nation. Political libertarianism is exactly what the founding fathers gave us. It's constitutionalism. It is diffused power in a system of checks and balances, where you have one ballast of power to check the other ballast of power, and sometimes there will be a little bit too much this way, a little bit too much that way, but they are competing for the same space, and they'll tend to push each other down, and that's the kind of conflict the founding fathers envisioned would keep power in check and not let anybody with a lust for power find the ability to dominate. And the third area, the social libertarianism, is very simply that absolute libertarianism in this arena is pretty much my body, my right to do it what I like, and I can do anything that I want to do, provided that I do not infringe on your rights. Now, this is the area where Christian conservatives, traditional conservatives, will probably have some difference with absolute libertarians, voluntarists, minarchists, and anarchists. But guess what? We can reconcile that if we agree on the other two areas of a federalist constitutional structure and free market economics. Focus there, because that's where you can achieve maximum freedom with federalism and with a free market. And then the social aspect is not to be legislated. Now, I'm not saying that legislation won't be involved, but the social aspect, the moral aspect, that occurs in your heart. And you have to change that culturally so that the laws will then reflect the culture as opposed to twisting the culture. And I think that that's where we tend to want to dominate each other on these pet peeve little issues. And even if it's not a little issue, even if it's a big issue, and I think that abortion is one of those huge issues, you can affect a better position on abortion if you happen to be a pro-lifer in a free market that has a federated, diffused power structure, if you can convince others of the truth of your position on a more local level where you have a larger voice. As we've seen, the alleged pro-life party, the Republican Party, for 40 years since that terrible, bad law, poor constitutional jurisprudence decision of Roe v. Wade came down, the Republicans have done shit on pro-life other than run their mouths to attract pro-life and Christian voters to come out and vote for their latest flavor of the week. And that's where it's got to stop. If you actually want to get things done, then you really need to understand that your power is local. Wouldn't you say that that's a pretty good analysis of, quote, libertarianism? I really don't like that word. But Tex, do you want to expand on that?
Well, yes, and, you know, one of the important things is power distance and getting power back closer to you, to where you have, and your voice is not one among 315 million, which is what's happening in the presidential election, or one in 80 million, or however many actually bother to vote, but one among 30,000, 20,000, 10,000, depending upon your locality. You have a lot more voice there. You can actually go to the meetings. You can meet these people. You can vote for people you actually know and who you trust, rather than transferring everything up to the federal government or letting Karl Rove pick your candidates. And, you know, this is one of the important things about, we've kind of forgotten how to have political discourse in this country, where no one is right about everything. It's not possible. And when you talk with someone else about political things, people are interested in jamming their opinion down someone else's throat, even if that other person raises good objections as to why that might not be a good idea. Rather than having a rational discussion and saying something like, wow, I never really thought of it that way, or that's interesting, perhaps you could talk about it more, it's mostly, shut up, you commie, liberal, conservative, you know, retrograde, Nazi, whatever the term is, to get you to shut up and to not listen, to shut off discourse and to shut off dialogue. And that sort of interaction, way, is not very productive, doesn't convince anyone. At the end of the day, I don't think it makes anyone feel better about themselves or that they convinced anyone, but it also cheapens the political discourse into a sort of verbal pugilism or boxing match, if you will, between you and your friends and neighbors, and then nobody wants to engage in that anymore. But really, we should be engaging in these conversations in order to fix what's the problems that are facing the country, because they're getting worse and worse, and we're still running around fighting with each other over nonsensical things and engaging in the terms of debate that are presented to us by television and not listening to our neighbors.
Yeah, why would we want to listen to our neighbors, Tex? I mean, isn't it better for us to just be, you know, fighting with each other over, you know, stupid differences while we allow, you know, the Roves and the Obamas and the Priebuses and the Boehners and all those other guys with massive lust for power to just dominate us and do the bankers' bidding so that they can keep getting that money printed out of nothing? without any concern for the effects of it or what it might do to us. I mean, clearly, we don't want to train our sights on them. We want to beat the shit out of each other, right?
Yeah, exactly, and see where that's gotten us. It's been really useful so far. And by doing that, what you're doing is turning over to television to tell you what to think and how to frame the debate, and then ultimately to tell you who to vote for and to tell you that any other vote except for their candidate is a futile or wasted vote. Well, if Republicans had been having real conversations amongst themselves during this election, as some of us were, stating that Mitt Romney, who cares if he wins or not, he's the same guy. He enacted RomneyCare, which is Obamacare. The guy who drafted RomneyCare for him worked for Obama and drafted Obamacare. And as he famously said, or infamously said, direct quote, it's the same fucking bill. Same guy wrote the same fucking bill. So, And then Romney, remember, not to go rehash this, but he ran as the guy who was who had implemented RomneyCare in Massachusetts, and he was using that as a springboard to the presidency because he was going to bring it to the nation's capital. And then he ran, I will dismantle it. Well, you can't run with that as your main reason for running and then run 4 years later as you're the leader of the guy who's going to dismantle it. If we had been able to have real conversations amongst ourselves, everybody would have realized this and said, let's not support that guy no matter what they say on TV because he's an idiot and he can't win. Instead, we let Karl Rove go on TV with his whiteboard and Dick Morris and tell everybody who to vote for, and he had no choice but to vote for Mitt Romney, even though everybody hated that choice and they didn't want to do it. And ultimately, they stayed home.
Yep, and the thing is, well, I don't know if they stayed home. I would say that those who are staying home anyway, 90 million some voters, and the rest of us just would not vote for Mitt Romney, no matter how Republican he becomes or talks, we knew otherwise. Look, the simple fact is that, yeah, they can keep getting away with this because we're divided. And, I mean, this is an old tactic. This is as old as – well, it's older than time. This is the tactic of Satan in the garden. This has been a war tactic for a long time, divide and conquer. If you can get people pitted against each other, then they won't unite against you, and it's easy to dominate. And that's exactly why we have a corporatist duopoly that basically gives us an R or a D to pick and choose, and we cheer our side, and then when the other side is there, we jeer them. Notice that since about 2002, 2003, the Democrats and the left were very anti-war, right? Bush's wars, illegal wars, bring the troops home, all this stuff, right? And then they elected Obama, who's more of a warmonger than even George Bush and Karl Rove and Dick Cheney. But the left ceased being anti-war because it was their guy doing it. Now their guy has taken the Patriot Act, put it on steroids, and we're being told that drone strikes against American citizens on American soil – without any disclosure at the request of the President of the United States, are ethical, moral, and legal? How the fuck did we get here? This is insane. I mean, this is just nuts. How is this even remotely close to the United States of America? Are you people crazy? Quit beating up on each other and start talking to each other because you have a lot more in common than you have differences. And when you get bogged down, I don't like Newt Gingrich. Ron Paul is a kook. When you get bogged down in that kind of stuff, that's how you lose.
Too, but I don't see anybody calling him on that.
Well, because he's on Fox News.
Oh, yeah.
He's he gets to speak on TV, and of course, whatever is on TV, it's got to be true. Of course, Fox News is the right wing. Yeah, the right wing news network. Give me a friggin' break. They're neither fair nor balanced, and they're certainly not in favor. I mean, granted, they'll give more quarter to conservatives than most of the others, but not really. Now, let's make this interesting, Tex. I'm going to bring on two callers simultaneously. And this should be interesting because here we have two people who disdain duopoly. They probably don't care too much for the Republican Party, and I'll let them speak to that themselves. And this should be an interesting debate because I want people to really figure out, look, recently at the prayer breakfast, Dr. Carson gave a great speech. I think you should check it out. Basically punched Obama in the nose on national television while he and his wife were sitting right there. It was friggin' great. But he talked about political correctness and how dangerous it is to Barack Obama, Mr. Politically Correct. In fact, if it wasn't for political correctness, I don't even know if this guy would have ever been elected. But he talked about how dangerous it is because it quells discussion and debate. And when I tell you that you need to set aside your differences with other people to unite on your commonalities, doesn't mean change your principles. It doesn't mean lose your values and morals and become something that you're not. And it doesn't mean don't have debate. Have vigorous, contentious debate about the issues. But drill down, look for truth, and look for commonality so that we can move forward together as a movement that will break this duopoly. Okay, and it doesn't mean you have to rally behind one cult of personality. Look, Ron Paul is great. I've been reading him for 20 years, and I think he's wonderful. I didn't support him in the last election because, frankly, I think Newt Gingrich is more effective in Washington, D.C. than Ron Paul, but because it's not about personality. And Ron Paul has started something that's far bigger than he is, and it doesn't necessarily have to be succeeded by Rand Paul. It's succeeded by each and every one of you. Because he started an intellectual revolution for us to get back to our roots of sound money, free markets, and the Constitution. Now, I don't see how any red-blooded American can disagree with those things, left or right. But yet we do. So the two callers we have are Gunny, otherwise known as Randy, who is the national vice chair of the Constitution Party. And we've also got Charles Frohman, not to be confused with Abe Frohman, the Sausage King of Chicago, who was a consultant for Governor Gary Johnson's 2012 Libertarian presidential campaign. I brought you both live simultaneously because I think you can both really chime in this conversation, but in deference to seniority because of just having dialed in first, I'm going to go ahead and give it to Randy first. If you could introduce yourself, make a quick point, and then we'll let Charles chime in, and then we'll go at it.
Well, good evening, gentlemen. It's great to be here, and thanks for having me.
Hey, Gunny.
Hey. Well, the only point I want to make, really, kind of real quickly, is I think you give Karl Rove and the Republican Party way too much credit.
Probably so.
I only give him credit for being an asshole.
Well, but, you know, you talk about, you know, he's doing this and he's doing that. You know, at the end of the day, I think he's having his punk card pulled just as much as Obama is. And I think, you know, he's being controlled and that there are masterminds behind it. He's just I think you can give him credit for being a front man and all. But, I don't think he's as good and wily as you're giving him credit for.
Well, I don't think he's as smart and wily as he thinks so, or as he seems to think, because look at his record of failure in the last several elections, and look at his record of failure in the 2012 elections, which should have been a cakewalk for the Republicans. So I don't think he's half as bright as he thinks he is. And in going after Brent Bozell most recently, I think he probably has jumped the shark within the party. And now, he's got some pretty big guns aimed at him and his conservative, quote, victory pack or whatever it is he's trying to do.
Yeah, I agree. And there's a few other things, but I'm gonna leave those comments for later. Just, one of the problems, and you're dead on certain aspects of it, Rex, that, we in the conservative movement, see, here's what we face. Okay, what we face is when for us people who are principled and we have some deep-seated principles that we believe are important, it's hard for us to just cast those aside willy-nilly to get together and build some kind of a coalition. Now, it's easy when you don't have any principles. You know, if you don't have any principles, you don't have any morals, you know, what difference does it make if you bound together with an abortionist or a polygamist or a – of course, there are some folks that would like that. But the point is, You know, if you have no morals and you have no values, it's easy to build coalitions with others who don't have it, even though you might not necessarily be an abortionist, but, you know, with the homosexual crowd and all of that, it's easy to build coalitions that way. But when you have principles and when you have morals, it's a lot harder to just cast all of that aside and build these great coalitions and stuff. So it's an inherent problem that we face. Okay, now how much are we going to have to give and take here to build a strong enough coalition to fight against those who, you know, morals and principles don't matter?
Well, I mean, they do matter, and I think that the argument that you have to make is, yes, the Roves and all those other people, you know, their only principle is lust for power. By any means necessary, if I can get power, privilege, and wealth, then I'll take it. Whereby the rest of us, and by what I mean by the rest of us, I'll run the gamut from, you know, leftist liberals to, you know, people that are principled and believe what they're actually saying, you know, so like Bernie Sanders or Dennis Kucinich, down to, you know, Ron Paul, Gary Johnson, from those who want a modicum of government regulation to those who are minarchists or even out and out anarchists. And I think that I'd like to hear Charles chime in on that. Charles, welcome to the Tex and Rex show. You're live with both of us, and it's good to have you here.
Thanks, Rex. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Yep, we can hear you.
Thanks, Tex, you as well, and Gunny. So I guess I Facebook friended Rex a few days ago, and I got invited to this show, and I like what you're discussing. I think, you know, backing up here and looking from the clouds, things are in transition here. And I'd like to commend, I think it was Rex who alluded to Dr. Carson's prayer breakfast speech with Obama, where he basically just said, give everyone universal medical savings accounts. Let's tax based on the Bible's tithing, 10%. Two fantastic proposals, and forget this PC crap. There's a potential candidate that can unite some people. But, you know, the point I want to bring in here is that I think people are sort of shell-shocked from Romney's loss and all the continued big government attacks and our terrible economy. And no one knows what's going to happen. I mean, is Rand Paul going to unite us? Is Gary Johnson going to get some traction? We are pretty disappointed to get 1%, you know, once again for the libertarians. So, you know, I think it's a lot of folks are discouraged and not knowing what to do. And I'll stop right there and just sort of, you know, I mean, would you guys agree there's sort of a confusion on what's going to happen next? There doesn't seem to be a natural leader, doesn't seem to be a clear game plan how to move forward. And then I'm sure that'll bring some ideas of what to say next.
Yeah, okay. I think what you had to say is absolutely dead on, that people are not just confused, they're also demoralized. They don't see a way out of this. They feel that we as a nation are stuck and we're sinking into the morass. And meanwhile, the party that said that it was championing the principles that conservatives believe in is actively engaged in trying to get rid of them. And so the person who I think, apart from Romney himself, who probably cost Republicans this victory in 2012, was Karl Rove himself, and he is still, you mentioned that people are shell-shocked. Well, Karl Rove is still manning the guns and shelling conservatives, and now he's trying to shell them before they even announce that they're running for office. So one of the first things you have to do for things to get better is get people to realize that this guy is up to no good and that he's not does not have the best interests of the party at heart. Or if he does have the best interest of the party at heart, he has the interest of the party in the sense of an organization that he feels that he wields power within, whatever it believes in. You know, the Republican Party to him could be advancing, you know, the cause of God only knows what, you know, brie cheese. And as long as he's in charge of it, and he's the most important person, he's going to be up there making sure that his party or his organization wins. Meanwhile, he's advertising his parties for brie cheese, and he gets up there and, you know, actually it's, you know, I don't know, Swiss cheese or something, because he doesn't care. And that's the problem, is that there is a disconnect between, that may have been a little convoluted metaphor there, I grant you, but I made it up on the fly. But the problem is that the people who are supporters of the Republican Party believe in these principles, and they're seeing the leadership just essentially run wild and then tell them that they're not wanted, and then candidates that they may actually be interested in hearing from, the leadership and people like Karl Rove, the consultant class, are actively trying to get rid of and chase out of the party. For what purpose,
yep.
I do not know. Before Reagan, you know, and before Goldwater, look, Goldwater, the reason Goldwater really lost was Kennedy got assassinated. You know, who's going to win against that? But what revived the Republican Party was Ronald Reagan and Gingrich, and a fiscal conservative path is what really has been the linchpin that unites the Republican Party. And ever since Karl Rove got into power in 2000 under Bush and became his chief political advisor, the party's been all about big government, big spending, and it just has betrayed the legacy. And now anybody who comes and talks about fiscal conservatism or conservatism of any stripe has to contend with Karl Rove up there manning the guns, trying to shoot down anybody who's going to do anything about it. And it's an organization, I think, that can't succeed as long as somebody like that is either A, calling the shots, or B, feels like he's calling the shots.
Yeah.
But Tex,
hold on just a second. Right?
Okay,
sure. I'll let you chime in next. But Tex, I think you nailed it. And there's two things to keep in mind. One is, talking about Karl Rove, we're really talking about the Republican Party, not necessarily conservatism as a whole, although the Republican Party purports to be the party for conservatives. And actually, I'm going to let Gundy go next, and then we'll go back to Tex and then Charles. The Constitution Party is the party that the Republican Party purports to be. But the way that they've got these rules in the ballot access creates a duopoly. And it is up to each and every one of you, no matter how you feel about libertarians, constitutional party, conservatives, or liberals, or whatever, it's up to each and every one of you to change the ballot access and the voting rules locally, because if you think your ideas are so good, let them stand up in the open marketplace to competition and win on their own merit rather than being forced down our throats. And Karl Rove has a knack for spending money and getting places. I mean, look at the fact that, he was put in timeout by Fox News because he had a friggin' meltdown, because he called the election wrong and he had gotten an argument with their election desk. So they put him in timeout, and then they just brought him back out again. Doesn't matter that he's starting this new conservative defeat project, or that he's, running the largest PAC and all this kind of crap, which is precisely why these losers at Fox News fired Dick Morris. But why did they keep Karl Rove? I mean, shouldn't he be gone too? So they kept him. And Bozell called them out on it. And like you said, Tex, and then Rove retaliates with, but look, Bozell, I respect him. He has done a lot of good things. The media center that he has does good work. But look, here's a guy who called me a fake conservative, who called our efforts a failure, who distorted what we did. And yet he turns around and starts crying crocodile tears, says something he shouldn't have said, and doesn't apologize for it. Bozell is out there calling me a fake conservative. Doesn't matter to me, but it's obviously not true. Bullshit. It's absolutely true. Karl Rove is a fake conservative. He has a spectacular record of failure, okay? And no one's distorting what you did. Karl Rove lost this election by shoving a tepid, I can't even call him a moderate, a tepid liberal Democrat down the throats of libertarian and conservative voters in the Republican Party. So as long as they've got the high ground, they're going to call the shots of this duopoly, and the Republican Party is going to bleed out and die, which is just fine with me, except for one thing. Right now, they're the brand name that is holding back any semblance of a total Democrat Party takeover. And you've got some actual conservatives in this Republican Party. There's Rand Paul. There's Justin Amash. I mean, Jim DeMint was there. He went to the Heritage Foundation. But there are some conservatives there. So I don't want the Republican Party to stay dead, but I certainly don't want it to be the only conservative voice. And so for comments on that, let's go to Randy, and then Tex, if you want to chime in on anything, and then we'll open it up to Charles.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Randy.
Two quick things. Number one, I don't want the Republican Party to go away. They make me look good. But Number two is I still think that, you know, Karl Rove, I don't think, is the mastermind behind all this garbage. I think he's a good front guy for it. But, you call it a duopoly. And I think we have to recognize who it is that is controlling the duopoly. And it is, you know, George Soros and the feds, you know, that banking cartel and all of that that's behind it. And so it doesn't matter if it's a Republican Party or the Democrat Party. There's one interest here that's controlling it all. And you guys exposed this before, you know, by, the corporations that were supporting both Romney and Obama. So, you know, until we really understand it doesn't matter, and we've really got to build these third parties, quote unquote, alternate parties, and start getting them into positions of power, they're going to continue down the road that they're continuing because there's no one to oppose them. And that's what we got to solve.
Text to you in a second. But, Gunny, yeah, we have talked about this before, and I agree with you. And, look, the reason we're picking on Karl Rove is because he is, as you say, the front man for this conspiracy. But unfortunately for most conventional Republican voters, this is, you know, Twilight Zone, X-Files, crazy Ron Paul stuff. So talking to most of them like that is not going to bring them into the conversation, but picking on Karl Rove is, and it's one and the same because he is their proxy. But the fact is that his lust for power is what made him their tool. And it's the same thing that gets someone like Obama or Mitt Romney to become the tool of this duopoly because of their lust for power. I would argue that, and there are a lot of critics of Gary Johnson out there, not my favorite guy, but I would argue that Gary Johnson is not one of those guys. Ron Paul is not one of those guys. Rand Paul is not one of those guys. We all have that tendency, but they really are more interested in serving on principle, and they're not going to get everything right, and you're not going to agree with everything, but I think that that's the point. So, you know, I like that we're picking on Karl Rove because, frankly, if you take him out, you haven't solved the problem. But you've exposed it to such a degree that maybe we'll be able to spot the next loser a little faster. Wouldn't you agree, Tex?
Absolutely. I mean, he's a symbol of what is wrong with the party and what is wrong with the, you know, quote, conservative movement is that it's been hijacked now by, in a way, the Republican Party, which had, you know, claimed to be the conservative movement, has now been hijacked by another group of people, most visibly personified in Karl Rove, who don't seem to actually believe in any of the conservative principles and are doing anything that they can to throw them overboard so that they can, well, ostensibly keep themselves in power. But I'm not even sure they're interested in that, the rate they're going and the number of staggering failures that they continue to have. But at least continue to enrich themselves in the face of victory or defeat. Doesn't really matter which comes first, as long as they continue to get paid. So the focus on Karl Rove, yes, he's sort of the front man for a bunch of big money people that are behind him. But if Karl Rove were sort of run out on a rail, and, you know, God only knows, hopefully he will be, but if he were, they would just replace him with someone else and who would come along and do the same thing. The important thing is to get people to realize what it is that he and people like him are doing in the party, who they are and what their agenda is, and how it's contrary to the agenda of the, you know, average Republican voter out on the street who supports the party because they support what the party claims to believe, what the party platform says. And if you get into these larger things, it tends to turn people off, and they don't want to think about that because that's too big. But, you know, if you can bring it home and kind of personify it, particularly, you know, Karl Rove is well-respected, I think, by the average conservative or the Republican voter for a long time, and which is why people listen to him on Fox News because, you know, oh, he's the guy, he's the architect, he's the guy who got George Bush in power. Thank God we didn't get Al Gore. Oh, thank God we didn't get John Kerry. And Karl Rove is the guy who's carrying the mantle and made that happen, so George Bush said. So people have an interest in him, and that's why they tended to go along with what he was trying to do in 2012. So if you can expose it as a big fraud, you know, then maybe you've opened people's eyes and you can start affecting some real change.
Well, this is Charlie here. You know, just backing up again here, I think we have a one-third, one-third, one-third country, a third Republicans, a third Democrats, and a third independent. And I know the coalition that Governor Gary Johnson was trying to develop for the last election was trying to capitalize on the disaffected members of all three of those cohorts. And, you know, we did have the 1980s press secretary for the Democratic National Committee endorse us, Terry Michaels, who was sick of the betrayals of the Democrats on civil liberties. And we had some high-profile Republicans like Craig Shirley, a biographer of Reagan, you mentioned as a hero of yours, as well as Roger Stone and some others. It's, like I said, it's a little discouraging about how we're going to make this coalition more powerful. I think Romney's poor showing shows that people don't want country club Republicans anymore. But as you've been complaining, Karl Rove and the Wall Street money doesn't want to let go of power that easily. You know, and I think even conservatives, you know, I'm in Virginia, are changing their tune. Glenn Beck is calling himself a libertarian now. Sean Hannity is calling Obama a hypocrite for his drone policy of killing Americans. So I think...
I'm sorry, Charlie, you lost me when Glenn Beck is a libertarian. I just have to say that, I mean, that's crazy. You know,
So I think, you know, conservatives, you know, my point here in Virginia, our candidates for governor, Cuccinelli, and then Lieutenant Governor Obenshain and a couple others are saying they're modifying their positions on the drug war and victimless crimes. That kind of change from conservative leaders is going to force conservative voters to look in the mirror and decide how do they feel on so-called conservative issues. Are they really that wedded to locking up nonviolent drug offenders, or are they willing to let crime control just rely on actual crime? You know, those kinds of changes are going to allow conservatives to develop their coalitions and get more support among independents. Go ahead.
I think you're right, and I think there's soul searching going on in the party, which is, okay, so, you know, we've gotten, you know, two black eyes now in 2008 and 2012, and so there's some soul searching going on in the party, and what is this party about, and how can it win in the future, and what is the point of a victory if it doesn't stand up for what it believes in? Okay, so now we have to go through this process of figuring out what we believe and come back stronger. This happened to the party before. It happens to a lot of organizations. And so it's not something that should be, you know, seen as a bad thing. It's probably a good thing because it will make us stronger in the long run. But, you know, the first opening salvo is from the RINOs because they feel like they're the most powerful wing and they have the best chance of winning because, hey, these Democrats win, so we should just copy what the Democrats do and then we could win all the time. And we'll just be Democrats light and that'll work. And so the opening salvo of this is Karl Rove's project. And so the most important thing, first off, is if you don't want the party to go in that direction, make sure that this effort is defeated, and not only defeated but ridiculed and rolled out of the party. And then you move into, okay, if not that, then what? You know, and where else is the fervor within the party? And, you know, a lot of people are increasingly saying that, hey, I'm a libertarian now. Even Glenn Beck claims to be that. Probably because he came down to Texas and realized a lot of Texans really do have that mentality. But, you know, that's a conversation that we have. Okay, well, if we, you know, start having a more libertarian or limited government bent, then what do we believe then? And more importantly, how do we get the big donors to go along with that? And, you know, this is one thing, just thinking that out loud, that you keep hearing about, particularly in Europe, which is government austerity. When conservatives take over in Europe, they always talk about, quote, austerity programs. So what austerity means is cutting government spending. Well, it's austerity for government, but you know what? If you reduce taxes, it's largesse for the people. It's relief. Call it that. It's relief for the people. Hey, we don't have to feed this beast that's on our back, you know, like beasts of burden carrying government on our back. Government austerity, oh, my God. You know, now we get some relief. But they frame it in terms of austerity, and people think, oh, my God, I don't want austerity. I'm already, you know, pinching pennies here. Well, it's not your austerity. It's the government's austerity. And
first
so
off, Tex, there are no conservatives in Europe, but other than that, I agree with you.
that's true.
Well, there's a
slightly,
few.
Slightly to the right of Stalin. I don't know, would it be the right or the left of Stalin? Stalin seems to have closed that loop and be in some sort of nadir between the two left and right sides.
Well, you're going to be criticized if you support austerity because the, you know, the corporate government complex that owns the media doesn't want to have any cuts, especially in military. And conservatives who call themselves libertarian, we're going to find out that's really so when it comes to so-called sequester cuts in defense, which aren't really cuts or reductions in increase. But that's another wing of the Republicans that's going to have to look in the mirror, the hawks, not just the country club Republicans, but also the social conservatives. I think that's popular with some of you in this program. I'm not sure why Rex, you don't like Gary Johnson. Maybe is it because he's pro-choice or he didn't really care if gays got married. I don't know.
I think he's a panderer. That's my concern.
A panderer.
I mean, I think he was pandering to the disaffected Obama voters, and he didn't message it very well. I think that's the fundamental problem with Gary Johnson for me is not necessarily his philosophy or his record as governor. I think it was the fact that he's not a terribly good politician. Now, one can make the argument that you don't really want a good politician. You want an honest man in power. Okay, that's nice. But the fact is that this system is so corrupt, you need somebody who's shrewd enough to do it. And I think that he dropped the ball because I think he could have picked up far more votes had he not and maybe it's just personal belief, and that's how he expressed it, but it's just that I'd never heard him say that before, and I think that the way that he conveyed his position on so-called gay marriage lost a lot of traditional conservative votes that he would have otherwise picked up, and I don't know that he picked up that many from Obama, so that was pretty much it. I don't disagree with the Libertarian Party. It's kind of hard to disagree with the Libertarian Party because pretty much just about any opinion you want is got a voice there. In fact, I actually voted Libertarian in a couple of presidential elections because I just didn't trust the Republicans. I mean, and we've talked about this before, and you're new to the show, Charles, but my first vote in a POTUS election would have been 92, and there was no way in hell I was voting for H.W. Bush because he made it very clear he ran as a Reaganite and then he governed as a corporatist. So I wasn't giving them my vote. So that year I actually reluctantly voted for him because I was young and stupid. People told me that if I voted for Ross Perot, I would have thrown away my vote. I believed it, and it's a lie, and none of us should believe that. But I agree with you, and I think that it's not so much – I think that people get bogged down in the personalities of the candidates. Oh, I don't like Gary Johnson. I can't stand Ron Paul. Newt Gingrich is a neocon. You get bogged down in the personality of the candidate, and you get bogged down in your pet peeve issue. And I think what we need to do is go back to first principles, because if we go back to first principles, whereby when we say libertarian, we don't mean the Libertarian Party, and we don't mean the socially libertine aspects of those who call themselves libertarian, but we're talking about classical liberalism. We're talking about the Constitution. We're talking about federalism. You will find that it would be difficult to disagree with Ron Paul and Gary Johnson and Virgil Goode on those points because they're all really in agreement. And most of us out here voting, and most of us clearly don't identify as Democrats or Republicans, even though we might vote one way or the other, agree on those things, and that's the common ground. You know, as you pointed out here in the Commonwealth, Ken Cuccinelli's kind of a pretty tough law and order guy, and he's taking a different look at the, the quote, drug incarcerations. Well, for several reasons. One, we can't afford to keep that many people in prison. And two, most of them, you know, there are criminals, absolutely, but most of them are not committing violent crimes towards other people. Now, I'm not for, drug legalization, but I am in favor of potential decriminalization. I think Ken Cuccinelli is looking at that because that is a principle on which we can agree, not only because it makes sense, but because we don't have the money to do these things. We don't have the money to become the global military police force. We just don't have it. So I think people are coming to the realization that even if you are in favor of these things, they're not tenable positions. And that's what we as voters need to do. Rather than looking for our next leader, looking for the next Ron Paul or Gary Johnson, is it Rand Paul? Is it who is it? What we need to do is agree on what we want, where we have commonality, where we will vote as a block, and the candidate will find us. But people can't seem to do that because they've got their little thing, their Social Security check, their desire to have same-sex marriage, the desire to have abortions, or whatever the issue might be. And you're getting hung up on that rather than looking at first principles. And I think that this last election really highlighted the fact that you can find a lot more common ground between people as diverse as Ron Paul, a Republican, Gary Johnson in the Libertarian Party, and Virgil Gude of the Constitution Party. There's a lot more commonality there than difference.
True, but there's some pretty strong differences too. And Virgil Gude, you know, wasn't very pro-immigration and definitely virulently for the drug war. At least in that last third-party debate I saw him with Gary and the Green people. But I think Romney's loss shows you that basically the conservatives, libertarian wing, are going to be out of power for a bit until we unite more around liberty and kind of let the big government aspects, whether it's for war, personal lives, kind of dissipate and get folks focused on physical issues. And we had to get the independents to get behind us and then work with the Democrats and progressives when we can and get them to learn more about our issues, whether it was Ron Paul folks educating the Occupy folks at their protest or uniting with the internet people on CISPA, internet freedom, immigration is a good coalition issue. Going against corporate welfare is a good coalition issue. We have to pursue these coalitions and be a big tent, because if we just retrench as conservatives, that's just going to guarantee defeat in ever more marginal districts in the rural areas.
I would agree with that, and I would like to throw it to Tex, and then I'm going to give Randy an opportunity to respond regarding the Virgil Gude thing. But one thing I want to point out before I give it to Tex, what I found most hope-inspiring in those alternate party debates was you had two socialists, Rocky Anderson and Jill Stein, as far as I'm concerned, a very traditional Virginia conservative, Virgil Gude, and Gary Johnson, all in total agreement regarding the indefinite detention provisions of NDAA and the drone strikes. And that's the kind of thing that will create a coalition that can't be stopped. Text to you.
Well, what you're saying is probably true, but I've kind of already accepted that, which is, you know, there may be a period where we have to go into the wilderness, but that period's upon us anyway. You know, the real question is, how long do you want to be in the wilderness? Do you want to realize that you're in the political wilderness right now, or do you want to realize 4 years from now? So I think it's what the party needs to be doing right now is looking at what it stands for. Now, if you're talking about pulling together all of the disparate third parties into one big party, really what I think the message that has to be gotten across to the average voter is that the only wasted vote is one where you vote against your own conscience, and to stop voting for the two big political parties because they don't care about you. They keep trying to trap you into voting for them based on differences that are largely rhetorical rather than actual, and then keeping you from voting for someone like, just sort of notoriously, I guess, in this election, but voting for someone like Ron Paul based on, oh, he's a kook, he's a fringe candidate, trying to marginalize them and drive people away from that vote or make them feel bad or like they're throwing their vote away for voting for him. And people need to really stop listening to the media and the way that they're trying to drive these wedge issues. You know, Glenn Beck, for all his conservative cred this time, basically spent all his libertarian cred that he's trying to get now, spent all of his time during the 2012 election trying to promote Mitt Romney and get rid of all the other candidates, Ron Paul included. So, you know, I'm not buying it. Has he turned over a new leaf? I mean, anything can happen. Do I believe it? No.
Bullshit. Excuse me. I'm sorry. That just slipped out.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, so people need to vote for the candidates who believe what they believe. And the reality is, okay, maybe that atomizes the vote to some extent, but there's a lot of Democrats who didn't want to vote for Barack Obama who thought he sucked. And
True.
They're ready to leave the Republican Party and come over and vote for the Republican. Like, who are you guys running? They're like, Mitt Romney, are you kidding me? And they went right back and they voted for Obama, or they didn't show up. I mean, the guy did lose 30% of the vote. So that's happening too. But if you can talk to even Democrats and say, look, quit voting for these two stupid parties that you do not agree with, and listen to all these other candidates and vote for people who believe what you actually believe, and start paying attention to your local elections, and we can fix this thing. Everybody in this country thinks that the country's on the wrong path. And I know people, they call and they do these polls and ask, do you think the country's on the right track or the wrong track? Well, if your guy's in power, you feel like, oh, I should say the right track because that makes my team look good. That's a lot of what's going on in these polls, but most everybody thinks the country's on the wrong track, and it's not going to get on the wrong track if you keep supporting the two parties that brought you here and that realistically are actively working together to keep you here. You got to get out of that. And if you can do that, you'll atomize the vote, yes, but in the process, there will be sort of a moment of discovery where people find out where the majority of people actually believe the country should go in voting for, you know, the two parties plus all the other third parties. If people voted for the, quote, third party or really the second parties that most closely believe what they believe, I think people would be surprised that, wow, there's a lot more people who believe what I believe than I thought before. And the parties, the major parties, maybe one of the second parties becomes the major parties of the country, that's possible, or one of the two current major parties starts to adopt those principles into their platform in order to appeal to that large base of voters, both of which would be wins. But, you know, continuing to go along to get along, which is what everybody's been doing, and just voting for their guy because, well, at least I'll beat the other guy. If I don't vote for this piece of crap candidate, then that other piece of crap candidate's going to win. Well, you're going to end up with a piece of crap candidate that way, and that's what's been going on.
Yep. No, Tex, you nailed it. And again, I think what people really need to understand is that the corruption, you know, I believe it's Lord Acton that said, you know, power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But there's another way of looking at that statement. I don't disagree with Lord Acton at all, but Frank Herbert, who is the author of Dune, and if you haven't read it, I recommend that you do. It is a science fiction novel, but it has massive social and political implications. Frank Herbert said, power attracts the corruptible. Absolute power attracts the absolutely corruptible. And as we see a growing federal leviathan, then men like Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, who want to wield that power, will say and do anything in order to get it. Barack Obama in 2008 ran on basically a Reaganite platform, and he promised all of these wonderful things, and he appealed also to the liberals, and yet he hasn't delivered anything other than, you know, more abortions. You know, he's a bigger warmonger than George Bush, but the Democrats decided to stop being anti-war. He's taken the police state apparatus that was built under George Bush and magnified it, and, you know, now you've got TSA Viper teams scattered around the country that could potentially wreak havoc in the next few months. So, you know, people really need to wake up, and I think that it's important to realize that a duopoly is more dangerous than a monopoly, and I believe Gunny has said it clearly, it's at least twice as bad. And Gunny, you're up next, but people need to realize that we are not meant to, now, you're not going to do away with political parties or what the Founding Fathers called factions, but you don't have to limit it to two. And what you need is more competition. I mean, why can't we have three conservative parties and three libertarian parties and one liberal party? You know, why can't we have that? Why can't we have, because, oh, well, then you're splitting the vote. Well, you know what? Only one man can be president. So even if he doesn't win with an absolute majority, one of them is going to be picked from one of those factions. And, you know, if you're a conservative and it happens to be the Republican who gets the president, you were a Constitution Party person, but you got, you know, 30% of Congress is Constitution Party. Well, guess what? The Constitution Party, the Libertarians, and the conservatives in the GOP are going to caucus together and work with the Republican conservative president or the Constitution Party conservative president. So it's just a really stupid idea to think that we can only have two choices, otherwise we're atomizing the vote. But what people need to realize is you've got to get focused on what's actually important to you. Gunny, I'm going to go ahead and throw it to you because I know there were some comments there about Virgil Good that maybe you want to clarify or the Constitution Party's position or anything else on your mind.
Yeah, you know, I did think about going down that road, and I was going to my fur bristled or whatever because he did get and I'm sorry, I forget the gentleman's name, but he did get
Charlie. And this is Tex and Rex, Radioactive. We like contentious debate because that's how you find the truth. But you play it however you feel.
He got Virgil's position wrong. I'll just put it that way. But because I think there's some other points that are more important than just debating those positions. Because you expressed my position pretty well and pretty clearly, and I appreciate that. I'm not sure. Are you guys hearing that lot of background noise there?
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah. Oh well, yep. It comes upon a way. Okay. Well, anyway, Rex, one of the things and one of the difficulties that we have here is establishing what is the primary focus and the primary point and purpose here. Because, you know, one of those things is you've mentioned the pro-life position. And, it just so happens that the Constitution Party has the sanctity of life as its number one plank. And then everything else is in alphabetical order. I don't know if you realize that or not. Because... you know, the point is, even the Declaration of Independence says that we have these rights that are endowed by our Creator, that among these are the rights to life, liberty, and property. And I believe that they were put in precedent order, that life is the most important, then comes liberty, and then comes the pursuit of happiness, or in the Constitution, rather than pursuit of happiness, it says property, life, liberty, or property. And I think those are in precedent order. And if you get those out of orders, you have a screwed up, morass society that you see that we do have. And so, you know, we can't even agree what's the most important principle of government. And, you know, the Constitution Party views that as the protection of life. Well, if that's just nothing more than a social issue, then we've got a real big problem about where we're going to unite to build this strong, solid coalition amongst all these parties. And don't get me wrong. You know, being a Marine, I understand what it means to have coalition forces to fight alongside you to fight the real enemy. And you are right. We do have to find some common ground. And I believe that we can find that without having to sacrifice our social principles as well. Like, for instance, and I think you heard me mention this a time before, where the Green Party candidate for governor here in Illinois in 2006 invited me to his press conference and gave me, because I was the Constitution Party candidate for governor, and, you know, pretty much between me and Rich Whitney, we're pretty well diametrically opposed on most of our issues and principles. But I'll tell you what, we are absolutely united on the fact that we need to destroy this duopoly. And so he gave me access to his created media where I could expose my run for governor. And that was a big learning experience for me. And that was, you know, in 2006 when I ran for governor and was reduced to a write-in candidate. So, you're right. We do have to find those bridges that we can build, those principles that we can unite on. What is it we're going to unite? And we do have to establish, you know, what the first principles are. But, you know, there are certain parts of this that I'm not going to give up the fact that I believe the most important principle is life. And if you can't get that right, I can't trust you to get it right on anything. But when it comes to ballot access and those kind of things, let me tell you, I can unite with the Socialist Party for that.
Yep, and I think that that's the kind of thing we have to think about. I mean, look, another issue, and I'm going to throw it to Charles next, another issue that unites people, once they understand it, and more people are understanding it now than ever before, and I will give kudos to Dr. Ron Paul for really putting it on the map, is the Federal Reserve. This is a private banking cartel that controls the money supply, distorts the economy, and is the principal reason that we have corruption in government. Now, you look in the Congress, and you've got agreement about auditing and ending the Federal Reserve, excuse me, from people as divergent as Bernie Sanders, a out-and-out socialist, Dennis Kucinich, a liberal Democrat, he's no longer there, Dr. Ron Paul, a conservative Republican. So there are issues on which we can get a wide spectrum of people to agree, and those issues happen to be the issues of principle. And the principle that you really have to keep in mind, whether you are looking at monetary policy with the Fed, the issue of protecting the life of the most innocent, especially the preborn, or you're looking at unending foreign adventurism, okay? The easiest way to distill those principles is understand that if you have consolidated power, you magnify corruption, and if you have diffused power, you minimize it.
Well, and Rex, if I may, that brings up a really, really good point about not just having the duopoly and a Constitution Party and a Libertarian Party. I think we need multiple parties because, you know, even if the Republican Party started getting their act together, the problem is that there's always this issue of power that you're talking about, and there's always going to be the issue of corruption, and it's always going to come back. And the only way to consistently and constantly diffuse the corruption is that if we have a system of competition whereby we can unseat these bozos. And one other point, you know, you talked about, you know, where a lot of people talk about, well, we need a president who has, you know, has had the overwhelming majority of support. So, you know, they look at, okay, we only want two candidates out there so that you get 51%, or even let's just say somebody gets a presidential candidate gets a 60% vote. Well, and they say, well, that's a super majority, and, you know, he's got the mandate from the people. Well, when only given two choices, what do you expect? You know, that's going to be changed quite differently. And, you know, this violates the idea that our founding fathers developed in the first place, and that was a representative form of government. And how people can get this convoluted idea that somehow two choices can represent the plethora of political ideology and social issues and financial issues and all of these is just simply bizarre at best. And so, you know, this is another reason why we have to have multiple parties, so that we have actually a better form of representation, that more people's views can be represented in our government. This idea that a duopoly can do that, in fact, you guys even use the term rhino. Well, a two-party system creates an inherent system of having rhinos, because you got people that don't believe that because there's such a wide range of political beliefs. And that's why
exactly.
This is one of the other things that we've got to get people to understand, is that if we really want solid representation, we've got to have a multiple party system to do it.
Yep. And Gunny, you have an incredible knack for being very pithy when you want to make a small point that takes 7 minutes, and I appreciate it for it. But I love the passion. Charles, would you like to chime in on the topic there?
Sure. The difficulty of getting more than two parties' attention made me think of, you know, Governor Gary Johnson's experience as a Republican before he became a Libertarian in 2011 during debate season, when he was kept not only out of the debates, but he was kept off of the polls, which determined the debates. So it was a farcical situation where he couldn't even get Ryan Priebus's help at the RNC to intervene to get him at least listed in the polls so that he could have a chance to qualify for inclusion in the debates.
Ryan Priebus was working against him in the background. You can be sure of that.
We have no doubt about that. We're not naive. But and then the Presidential Debate Commission in itself has such a high threshold to get in the debates, 15%. And then again, if you're not in the polls, how can you get that 15%? It's It's really a rigged system. I think it was Rex who mentioned ballot access laws. Here in Virginia, there is a bill to reduce to 5,000 signatures the number required to get on the presidential ballot. That would help Newt Gingrich as well as Gary Johnson. And that has to happen in every state. As the internet empowers people with useful information, they will get more interested in other parties and how they can break up this duopoly. Hopefully the coming economic collapse will get folks thinking what to do about the situation. Of course, we run the risk that they'll run to the Democrats to avoid austerity. I think it was Tex that mentioned the NDAA. That's going to bring, hopefully, folks on the left and independents united with libertarians to restore our civil liberties and due process. And there is hope there, but, you know, I do need to get off the phone here. Unfortunately, it's been a good show, but developing this coalition is important. I know Gunny won't agree with my characterization of his candidate on immigration or the drug war, but and both those issues are important, I think, to take the more libertarian side. We don't have time to get into the details of immigration, but immigration is a good thing. And I know folks like to divide it between legal and illegal immigration, but I don't think we need to give the government any power that it doesn't need. And as far as the drug war goes, you know, that's just a war that's going to end eventually. We might have to get behind it. And to address abortion real quickly, Governor Gary Johnson supports the current law of the land, which is the Casey decision. And that is a decision that should be okay for both pro-lifers and pro-choicers, because it basically means states can restrict abortion once viability is defined on a state-by-state basis. So that way you give troubled mothers a month or two to abort in the early part of the period, and then once scientists decide when viability happens, then you could pass restrictions. And Gary Johnson himself passed restrictions while governor of New Mexico, banning late-term abortions, banning taxpayer funding, requiring parental notification. So even as a pro-choicer, he wasn't radical on the issue and understood that you had to have some protection for life, at least in the latter part of the pregnancy. So that's, you know, I'll let you respond to that.
Oh, yeah. Well, Charles, I know you need to go, and we appreciate you being here. But, yeah, I will point out a couple of things real quick. And one is, again, when we take it down issue by issue, there's going to be a wide plethora of differences, which is why we need multiple parties. But when we take it down on principle, we can really get down to the nitty-gritty of what's important. Now, I will disagree on two things. Number one is the, you know, the abortion issue. There is no, you know, radical position. There is no, you know, you can't get a little pregnant. You know, either it's a baby or it's not a baby. And if it's a human baby, it can't be anything else, then as an American, it is incumbent upon all of us and collectively through government to defend and protect innocent life. There is a very utilitarian and libertarian argument for that as well, because if we undermine that, we could very much undermine liberty, because the first property that any one of us owns is our own body. And scientifically speaking, we know that at the moment of conception, that is a full DNA code of a fully actualized human being, and that is their property. And if we undermine that first property that a human being owns, then there is no such thing as private property, and the whole thing collapses. But that is a debate for another day. So is the immigration issue, and you know, we'd love to have you back. We want to get into these things, but generally on Tex and Rex, we try to kind of stay in the realm of principle, because I find that is the easiest way to build coalitions. I think that, you know, for pro-lifers to be advocating for, you know, laws that make abortion illegal, well, you know, that's wonderful. You haven't gotten it in 40 years. It's probably going to be another 40 years before you even get close to getting it. How many more millions will die? So that is a foolish way to go about it, because clearly it doesn't work. But if along the lines of what Gary Johnson proposed, you do this on a state by state, then pro-lifers have a much larger voice state by state, especially since flyover country tends to be considerably more pro-life than the coasts. So you need to think about that. And then the other aspect of it is very clear that when you have concentrated power, you might get the victory today, but you've concentrated the power so that the other side can get the victory tomorrow. With diffuse power, it really becomes much easier for people to have a voice and have a say and build coalition. So I think that that's another way to go about it. And fundamentally, the whole issue of abortion, whether, you know, I believe that when you make a positive law being the law that man makes, you're essentially sanctioning or permitting or disallowing an activity. And so people tend to feel that that makes it right or wrong. But let's be clear about something. Man's positive law, if it does not comport with the natural law, is no law at all. And eventually you will force people into noncompliance. If somebody wants an abortion, they're going to get one whether it's legal or illegal. There were many abortions in this country before Roe v. Wade, before 1973. We just didn't sanction them as okay by law. And there will be many after if you manage to make abortion illegal in this entire country. It is an issue that has to be changed by changing the culture and changing people's hearts. And that is probably true for a number of issues. And again, the structure to get this done, the structure for our culture to be able to fully develop, is one in which free people voluntarily can interact with each other and debate these ideas in the public square and develop solutions. That is never going to happen if you keep undermining the federal structure and putting power in the hands of one man, which is what George Bush did. And you cheered it, and then all that power was handed to Barack Obama, and suddenly you went apeshit. You should disdain the consolidation of power. I don't care which asshole has it. It's just bad. Even if it was a perfectly good man, you don't want that kind of power in the hands of one man. It's far too tempting. So, Charles, if you'd like to give us a final thought, because I know you mentioned you had to leave, we'd appreciate it, and we'd love to have you back.
Oh, thanks. And I couldn't argue with that final point. Definitely agree with the Federalist approach to avoid the bad person getting that power later on. Gary Johnson has restarted his nonprofit Our America Initiative to stay in the public limelight so he can be Rand Paul's foible going forward to see who has the Liberty helm. Although I agree with you, we don't want to put trust in one single man. It's going to be a multitude of approaches going forward, I believe. He's starting a college tour, so hopefully that can get the young folks excited that they're our future. And I like the thoughts that you guys are pushing here with the principles and the decentralization. And I do look forward to getting back on your show in the future.
Well,
we'd love to have you back
in.
Anytime.
Call in anytime.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Good night.
All right, good night, Charles.
Good night, Charles.
All right, that was a great conversation. And one thing that I will say, you know, Tex and Rex, we can be funny, we can be irreverent, but this is serious stuff. And we love having different viewpoints from different guests on. You know, it's why we keep inviting Gunny back because he's so soft spoken and, you know, doesn't really get into the fray. But, you know, I think, and Dr. Carson touched on this, okay, political correctness, which is originally called cultural Marxism, dumbs us down, makes us afraid to say what we think, and dilutes the conversation so that there's almost no debate. Well, that's stupid, because you can clearly see here that we had different people with different viewpoints, and we have a vigorous discussion because we all agree on certain principles, one of them being free speech. And the First Amendment was designed to protect a pre-existent right, and that is predominantly to protect political speech, especially unpopular political speech. So we can have somebody who worked on the Johnson campaign. We can have Randy, who's with the Constitution Party, worked on, you know, with Virgil Goode and talking, you know, presidential terms. You know, you got Tex and Rex here who are Newt Gingrich supporters with Ron Paul sympathies, which tends to put us right in the middle so that we take flack from both sides. And that's the beauty of the system our founding fathers gave us. And when you piss it away by giving guys like Karl Rove too much power to dominate the media, the polling, the debates, and handpicking candidates, then you're killing discourse, you're killing debate, you're killing critical thinking, and you're killing whatever semblance of American culture we have left.
Amen, brother.
Absolutely, Rex. And, you know, we have to be able to talk about these things. And, look, it's true. Everyone's disillusioned. Nobody knows the path out, but there will be a path out. It will present itself.
I've got a path out. I can tell you what the path out is. It's just nobody's willing to follow me. Let's go, guys.
Exactly.
Come on.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And, you know, eventually people will find that path out. They'll all jump onto it, and that will be the way everyone goes. And when you look back at history, it always seems obvious. Oh, and then that happened, and then everything made sense, and now we're on to the next chapter. But right now, when you're in the middle of it, you just don't know what's going on, and that creates confusion and uncertainty and then, you know, anxiety and fear as to where things are going to go. But the dawn will come, and this conversation and many others being held in different places and higher places, lower places, but in other places all throughout the country are the type of thing that will find the tonic to fix what's wrong with the country, the conservative movement, perhaps the Republican Party, if that's even fixable. And, you know, we'll come out of it because people still believe these things, and a majority of people still believe these things. The problem is too many people tune in the TV and let the television people tell everyone that what they believe is in the minority and that they need to do what TV says they should do. That really is the problem. It's too passive an activity, and people tend to believe it too much.
Yeah. Hey, just to let you guys know, there, you know, I got to tell you, there are really days that I really wonder if, you know, we're going to have the tenacity and be able to change. And you're right, Rex. I mean, you know, we have to change the hearts and the minds of the people if we are going to see true, lasting, significant change. And there are days that I just wonder if that's going to be possible. You know, John Adams said that this Constitution was for a moral and religious people, wholly inadequate for the government of any other. And, you know, there are days I wonder, you know, is it really time for us to just toss this sacred document out the window because of the mores of society? Are we going to be able to change? That's why we got all these convoluted laws, because we've got a society that has no moral compass anymore. And so, you know, while I would say, you know, I'm a constitutionalist, I believe in this, what I would call a sacred document. But the bottom line is, if we've got people that have no moral compass, then it cannot govern these people. It's not going to have what it takes.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. And the fact is that you're going to lose the Constitution. I mean, we've more or less already lost it. It's just still legally there so we can restore it. But, you know, you don't have to scrap it. It self-deports, as Mitt Romney would say, if you lose your moral compass. But that's not a political problem. We didn't get here politically, and we're not going to get out of here politically. The political issue is separate. The Constitution is the political ideal we should all be striving for, no matter where we are in some of these issues. And that's what debate is about. That's why we have a Congress, a bicameral Congress, people. That's why we have 50 state governments. Because we might not agree about certain things, and so we're supposed to have the debate within the form of the Constitution and federalism. But the reason that we are where we are here, because too many so-called Christians are just out-and-out assholes.
And pansies.
That's right. I said it. Okay? The problem that we're facing here is because you, who call yourselves Christians and don't act Christian, have screwed it up. I don't blame the unbelievers. I don't blame those who haven't encountered Christ. I blame you, because it is your poor witness, your judgmental, degrading attitude, your desire to implement whatever version of Christianity you see as the right one through law rather than through love is why we are where we are. And if you want to fix it, then you'd better start acting like Jesus Christ in the culture and convince people the way he did, with love, not with law. That's the problem. And you're going to lose your Constitution if you don't do that. And not only that, but you're also going to basically be one of those Christians that yells, "Lord, Lord," and he tells you, "I knew you not." So start acting like you say you believe in the Bible. That's why we've lost our Christian culture. That's not a political problem. That's a problem with each and every one of us who don't act the part. The political problem is corporatism, the Federal Reserve, the concentrated power. And that is something that we can agree on whether we're Christians, not Christians, liberals, or conservatives, because it is the form of government that allows for more expression and more voices. And if you think your ideas are so damn good, let them stand on their own merit. If your ideas suck so bad you have to force them on everybody else, then we probably don't want them. And I think that that's what people have to realize. Gentlemen, we've got some callers who want to chime in, and we've only got about 19 minutes of show left. So, Randy, would you like to stick around?
I'll stick around. And I just got to say, man, I felt like I was just a church, brother. And I'm the one who goes by the moniker, the constitutional evangelist, and I just feel like I was evangelized. So good job.
Well, I will attribute that to the Holy Spirit and not to Rex's foul mouth. Thanks, Randy. All right, Tex, you got something you want to say, or shall I bring on the caller?
Yeah, I want to say bring on the callers.
Okay. First caller is area code 704. You are live with Tex and Rex. Who are you, and what's on your mind regarding our topic of the night, which is the lust for power?
Yeah, this is Chuck Suter, constitutionalwar.org. Talked to you guys the past couple weeks, and
hey,
love
Chuck,
the show, man. Good, good. I was talking to Brian earlier. We were strategizing about some of the things with the rules changes and all that. But, you know, the conclusion that I've come to is obviously keep fighting the establishment within the party. At the same time, what you guys are saying is exactly right on a spiritual level. What can we do to make the biggest change? In my opinion, our biggest change is going to come from forcing the party, forcing whatever party that they rise up against us to do the right thing, not because of party politics, but because of our own actions, because of our outreach to our community. And this week, yesterday actually, I had the pleasure of going up to the HK on J up in the capital here in North Carolina of Raleigh, where they have the AFL-CIO, the NAACP, and all the liberal and progressive organizations marching up there. They're bussed in. They're paid to come in. And they were marching for various different issues, stop the war on women, you know, all kinds of things that just most of them didn't understand. You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised how many of them do understand pro-life. We went up. I was up there with Brooke McCowan, who does a lot of work with Flip Benham. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Flip, but Flip does pro-life stuff all across the country. And, you know, we were out there with our signs. And, you know, so many people want to say, hey, forget the social issues. I agree. When the Republican Party wants to focus on gay marriage instead of the life of the unborn children that are created when straight people have sex, your priorities are completely out of whack. And that's what the Republican Party is focusing on. What we were able to accomplish up there was nothing short of magnificent. I'm going to have a video up here soon, and I'm going to share it with you guys. But I'm going to break. I want to break it here on you guys' show. What the operation that my website constitutionalwar.org is going to be doing, and you know, I tried to come up with something clever. I came up with something basic. Operation Nullify Roe v. Wade. Every state in this country that's run by Republicans could tomorrow call in a special session and they could nullify Roe v. Wade. They could save millions of babies' lives. Now, whether you're pro-life or not, you should be willing to call out the conservatives, if that's what party you deal with, for being complete and total hypocrites. Why the hell am I the guy coming up with nullify Roe v. Wade when all these folks say that they are so pro-life, that they are so committed to this cause? that they would turn over every stone to accomplish something like this and haven't done anything to do it. If you are pro-life, please join us in this campaign. But if you're not, call them out on the hypocrisy, because it's absolutely disgusting. And when my wife actually came up with this idea, I was blown away. I couldn't believe that it hadn't hit me. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, though, and I'm not running for office. This should have already been done. We can build an alliance with the Tea Party, the Liberty Movement, the Newt Gingrich folks, the Santorum folks, the Ron Paul folks, the Michelle Bachmann folks, the Rick Perry folks, on and on and on down the line. Nullification is the key. It's not national politics. Nullification, interposition, and the state's ability to decide their own destiny.
Yeah, well, Chuck, you still there?
Did we lose you?
Chuck, I think you dropped. Okay, I'll pop in with picking up on that idea. I think it is a great idea, I think that if conservatives who have in the Republican platform a pro-life platform don't do this, they are hypocrites. However, I got really excited because at first I thought he said nullify Roe, but apparently he said nullify Roe v. Wade. Well, you know what? We might as well nullify Roe while we're at it. But no, it's absolutely true, and we've said this before on the show. And on Tex and Rex, we always employ a both and rather than an either or. It's not either national politics or local politics. It's not either the Republican Party or conservatives outside of the Republican Party. It's both and. The real solutions long term are going to have to come from the states, but the states are going to start warring with each other if there isn't a federal government. The problem is that the federal government has grown too big and too powerful, and the states have been too timid and too quiet, and seeing this nullification move, whether it's on drones, the Second Amendment, pro-life like Chuck is proposing, whatever it is, I think that it's a great move because it asserts states' authority, and now you've got 50 competing sovereignties putting forward their highest and best ideas, and then people will vote with their feet. And when people vote with their feet, they're voting with commerce, with tax revenue, with business growth, and those states that have the shitty policies where people don't want to live will wither and die if they don't come around to the policies that work, and those states with the good policies will thrive. And that's a beautiful thing, and that's what we need to get back to. So I applaud that idea wholeheartedly. Go ahead.
Are you guys able to hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Very good. Well, I'll listen to what you guys have to say, but, I just want to make sure I'm still here with you.
Well, I was just going to say, with respect to nullification on that issue, if I'm not mistaken, I think Utah actually passed a law like that in around 1995, and then it got struck down. So, you know, I would be interested to hear how do you overcome that, or that issue? Because Utah tried to do that already.
That was going to be a point that I was basically going to somewhat address. You know, back a few years ago, you know, when Montana first started kind of having their nullification, of course, a lot of these states, you know, we're talking about state sovereignty. Montana created a law that said, look, if we make a gun here, we sell it to a resident here, federal government, you have no business in anything that we do with our guns here. And but the problem is, as I started looking at this big picture kind of thing, is that all of this nullification, all this rattling of the sabers and all, is all well and good until the federal government starts saying, wait, hold on here. If you don't start doing what's right, we're going to pull back this a couple million dollars that we've been giving to you. Wait a minute. You want money for this? We're pulling that money back. So the problem is, he who has the money has the power, and the federal government has the money, has the power, because they have the power to tax our incomes, as we know that happened 100 years ago.
Randy, let me slow you down a little bit, because that's bullshit, and not that what you're saying is bullshit. What bullshit is that the federal government has the money. They don't have any money. They've been broke since 1933.
Well,
They got paper. And here's the thing. In the Virginia legislature, Delegate Bob Marshall has introduced a bill to start investigating a precious metal-backed currency for the Commonwealth of Virginia. Other states have done that. I believe one of the Dakotas did that also. So nullification is only going to work with two things. One, the states have to start coining their own money for intrastate interstate usage, okay? And they're going to have to start nullifying the IRS operations in their own
state.
And to do that, you're going to need a well-regulated state militia.
Yep. And that's
so
the point. Here's the thing
that I would throw at you guys. You know, we've got liberty folks. We've got people that want to try to save the RNC. I'm one of them. I'm doing my damnedest to try to change the rules. We've got folks. What he's referring to in Montana is the Firearms Freedom Act, and Representative Glenn Bradley introduced that same bill here in North Carolina to no avail, and he's now running for vice chairman, which makes him look very good, and he's actually doing pretty good. Endorsed by Ron Paul, he's a liberty guy. He's a constitutionalist, old guard type guy, Marine. Listen, the fact of the matter is, if you want to look at the most active group of, grassroots activism, people that don't give a shit, sorry for my French, but what the election cycle brings, that are still out there every single day, 365, 24/7, whatever. These guys are the pro-life movement because they feel like they're called from God, and I believe that they are. And they are out there all the time. Once the pro-life movement gets on board with nullification, it's over. It's over. So please, you don't have to go through my website to be a part of this. Start your own thing. Take the idea and run with it. I'm here on the record saying I want to start through my website, constitutionalwar.org, Operation Nullify Roe vs. Wade. Don't feel like that you're stealing my idea because you put it on your website. Take it. It's not a money-making thing. This is a saving the country, saving lives thing. It's for everybody to be a part of. Please jump on board with it. If we get the pro-life movement to understand, hey, we can build an alliance with the Tea Party and the Liberty Movement and the reformers in the Republican Party and across the board, whatever issue you want to say. But I'd say three top issues right there off the bat for conservatives. You've got nullification of Obamacare, nullification of any gun laws that are pending and coming down from Washington, D.C., that cesspool. And then you've got Roe versus Wade. The Supreme Court and Dred Scott said black people were not humans. The Supreme Court was wrong. Black people are humans, as a matter of fact. In case anybody out there is wondering, I'll break the news to you. Black people are human, okay? So are those fetuses inside the woman's body. You don't have to agree with me on that, but the thing that you should realize is if you are a pro-choice person, that if someday it comes down to the fact that the federal government says your state can't decide when life begins, then you're going to be feeling as bad as us pro-lifers feel right now. And this, in my opinion, maybe I've got a head full of gas right now, is just an unstoppable plan.
No, Chuck, it's a great idea, and I applaud anybody that wants to join you or copy you. And again, constitutionalwar.org, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. The video is not up right now, but it will be up soon. The link is about to be posted. I don't even care if somebody else starts rolling with this. I want this thing to go now. I'm going to have it up soon, within the next 24 hours, and I'll probably drop in and talk about it a little bit more with you guys, next week or something like that. The fact of the matter is, if that alliance is built and we can wake up every pro-lifer in this country to go, to the wall with the nullification agenda. I'm not sure who mentioned it a second ago, but they said, you know, the nullification, we're worried about how much teeth it has. Well, the main thing that Nullify Now focuses on, and they'll be in North Carolina here in my state within the next 2 months, something like that. We reached our quota about a month ago. They're going to be in our state. Tom Woods is going to be here, hopefully, hush-hush, but we might actually even have Ron Paul speaking there. Speaking here, the problem with nullification is, yes, if it's just one state, then yes, the feds can target one state. You look at the Real ID Act, and there was 27 states and governors that said, we're not going along with the Real ID. So what have they done? They didn't get rid of the Real ID, but what they have done is they keep pushing back the deadline. I mean, the deadline was 8 years ago for the Real ID. So they just keep pushing it back. Every single year they push it back because the states will not go along with it. The feds haven't given up on the Real ID, but what has happened is the states have not gone along with it, so the feds are forced, and no nullification has any teeth unless there's interposition involved with that. And you tell the feds, you come to our state and you try to enforce Obamacare gun legislation or Roe versus Wade, and we will arrest any federal agents that you send here. We will arrest them and put them in prison. That's it.
No, Chuck, you nailed it. I appreciate you bringing it to our attention. We're almost out of time, so I appreciate you bringing it up. Nullification is clearly a very important issue. We'll probably be talking about that in upcoming shows. For anybody, we're probably going to spill into overtime just a tad because I got another caller coming in. So if any of you listening right now want to continue to listen live, you got to call in the next 3 minutes, 646-649-1013. Otherwise, check us out in archives. And before I bring in the next caller, I'm going to give it to Chuck for final thoughts, and then I'm going to throw it to my co-host, Tex, and then I'll bring in our last caller.
Well, yeah, I mean, final thoughts is, obviously what you guys were talking about, is the Constitution still valid? Can the Constitution save us? And the answer is absolutely not. A piece of paper is never going to save us. Just like nullification has no teeth unless people get behind it, the Constitution has no teeth unless people get behind it. And that's obvious because we are a country that was given everything. We're like the rich kids of the world. You know, the kids that just... not just rich kids either. The rich kids that had parents that gave them everything and gave them all the ability to just go to the stars. And that's what we have. And through our culture and through whatever you want to point to, I won't do the pointing for you, we failed. And Ron Paul has said so himself. I'm a big Ron Paul guy. And I think many others have articulated the same thing, that the Constitution has failed because of the condition and the mindset of the people in this country. The only way to save yourself, the only way to save your community, to save your country, is to change the paradigm of the way people think, believe, act, and treat each other within this country.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I agree with you. It is that the Constitution is just a piece of paper without the heart, which is the people. Thanks for chiming in, Chuck. Tex, you got something you want to add before I bring our last caller?
Well, I would just echo what he was just saying, which is, the fault is not in our stars, but in ourselves. The Founding Fathers themselves said that, you need a virtuous people in order to safeguard these institutions, and a virtuous people is one that would be suspicious of a transfer of power further away from them to some other that is smarter than them and can figure out all this complicated stuff, because I don't have time. I'm too busy, watching TV or, doing whatever it is that I do, paying attention to sports games, but some other smart person will figure that out. Well, virtuous people would know that that's not possible, because there are no group of people who understand your problems better than you do, and you and your neighbors and the problems in your community. And that's why they created a system that had power near you, where you had citizen legislators, because the citizens themselves know what's wrong. and the citizens can fix these problems. But instead, we decided that, oh, there's these great, you know, supermen, these great intellects who can figure out all this really smart stuff, and somehow government is not the source of the problems, but government sits apart from all problems and is distant from the activity of society. They're, since they're away from it, they can view everything from this neutral, unbiased point of view and come up with the best solution for me. That's not how government works. You know, government always, if you look historically, has been fairly corrupt and a fairly malign force in most people's lives. Just go look throughout history. And so you have to be distrustful of power, not necessarily of government, but of power and any concentration of power. And we've forgotten that because we've gotten comfortable. And in the process of getting comfortable, we also have become less virtuous. And that's just human nature. But the problem is with not necessarily the Constitution, but the problem is with the people who are supposed to be enforcing the Constitution, because, you know, do they believe it anymore? Do they care about it? Nancy Pelosi, you know, sort of famously, you know, said, are you kidding me, when somebody said, you know, where in the Constitution do you have this authority? And then, you know, I forget who it was, some congressman, I believe it was from Florida, who said, I don't think about the Constitution very much. Okay, well, you took an oath to uphold it. I guess you might want to think about that. He quickly backtracked on that one, but only because someone came to him. I mean, the real answer that he had was the first answer that he gave. You know, it was a gaffe because he mistakenly told the truth.
Yeah.
And that really is the problem. And then he said that, he came back and he gave this apology, and everybody's like, oh, don't worry, he apologized. Well, is that a virtuous people safeguarding their freedoms against the you know, encroach of central government? No, it was a bunch of people who weren't paying attention, like, oh, my God, I can't believe he said that. Oh, he apologized, so it's okay, everybody go back home. Well, that's what that person actually believes. He apologized because he got called on.
That's right, and if the people reelect him, then it's their fault, they're idiots. We're a little bit in overtime. I kind of want to wrap this up, but we got a couple of people I want to have chime in, starting with one of our favorite guests who has his own show on Blog Talk Radio, Coalition of Freedom, as well as Coalition of Freedom on Facebook.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
That is good. That is good.
Chris, you're live with Tex and Rex and Gunny.
Gentlemen, and I say that lightly.
Hey, how's it going, Chris?
Good, guys. How you doing? Well,
We've been talking. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Well,
I was going to tee it up for you,
so I listened. What's that?
Okay. Well, okay. You were listening. Good. Then you.
Yeah.
Feel
no,
good.
I've been listening for. Yeah. When I got home, but I was late. But I. You know, I think about this concept because we started this conversation on building coalitions, I don't know, around convention time or something like that. I had actually started doing some work on it a little bit earlier than that. You know, I had some harebrained idea that I was going to start figuring out what the Liberty Movement was about because I didn't know. It's very interesting because, you know, building the group Coalition of Freedom was a leap of faith, you know, because you had the libertarians, you had the, you know, the conservatives, the Newt people, the Paul people, and I'm looking at the timeline and the effort and the time that we've spent on building that group and where we're at in terms of numbers, in terms of people who have come and gone and watched all the conversations. Including, yeah, and I know you saw some stuff on, you were on there earlier today, Rex, and you saw some, you know, bits and pieces of things. And I think, I don't know of another environment that has gone as far as we have, because I remember the first 300 people was quite an event, if you remember back in those days, you know, when we first threw it together, because, you know, we were still in the presidential election, and as soon as people kind of split off from the convention, and they, you know, they were either going to write in Ron Paul, or they were going to go to the Constitution Party, or they're going to go to the Libertarian Party. It was just amazing how quickly that initial group of people became divided again. And I can say from, you know, being somebody who monitored that every day, I can tell you that people are nuts, you know, and where it really happens, and sometimes I think that people, it's an ingrained, you know, bit sound bites that they've heard from somebody else on Ron Paul or Gary Johnson or Newt Gingrich or Virgil Goode, because I heard, you know, like Randy say earlier, you know, that Chuck, Charlie or Chuck or whatever his name was, sorry, if he's listening.
That was Charlie.
Charles, right, that if he got some of Virgil Goode's points wrong. And I think that this is the challenge. And Rex, you know, we were chatting about this earlier today. You know, it is amazing how hard it is to build groups of people on common ground and how quickly you can divide people on issues. And that has got to change. Or, you know what? We ain't ever going to win crap. And there are days that I really get frustrated because, you know, I'm standing on this and this is it. It's got to be this. And if it isn't this, then no go. Well, we just lost, you know, because we'll never have the damn numbers to do anything. It's going to, if you want to talk about, of course, you know, it will be different on state levels and governorships and sheriffs and things like that, as long as you got ballot access, which I think we all of us here understand fairly well. But when you start getting at the national level, you know, you need the numbers. I mean, it's going to take 60 million people to elect a president or less if three parties or four parties, you know, get good representation and get in the debates and get the ballot access. But it takes tens of millions of people, you know. So we got to figure out how in the hell we're going to get past some of these issues, because on a daily basis, I see them come up over and over and over. And it's kind of like, get over it already. I think you said that to me in a chat, not to me, but, you know, about other people in the group. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You and I are over it a long time ago. But
yeah,
it's like, come on, people. You know, it's the Christians and the conservatives and the Tea Party and the Paul and the constitutionalists and the libertarians and the and the independents, and I swear to God, it's three items to keep all these people divided. And if they would come together and work together, we could change this in 2014, and it would and forever.
Yep. Well, Chris,
I don't mean to be to throw a water on the fire, but I've worked this freaking goal daily, you know, for months and months and months and months and months. And I'm telling you, man, people are nuts.
Yeah, people are nuts. But, Chris, I mean, you highlighted a very important point, because we started out talking about libido dominandi, the lust for power. And we were talking about Karl Rove predominantly, and Priebus and Boehner and all those other assholes who just basically are attracted to the Republican Party because it's where they can set up their little fiefdom, whether they're conservative, not conservative, corporatist, whatever, it doesn't matter. As long as they're in power, they don't care. But bringing it down to, you know, where the wheels hit the road, we all have this tendency. And so everybody wants to be right about their thing, their party, their candidate, their issue. And I'm not diminishing the parties, the candidates, or the issues. These things are important. But if you want to build coalitions, people really need to start focusing on first principles. First principles. And the one that I think is the – well, there's three of them that are the most divisive. Life, abortion, you know, that, foreign policy, and immigration. Okay? Fiscal issues, you're pretty much either a Keynesian socialist or you're a free marketer. I mean, you know, or you're ignorant, okay? But that's kind of an easy one. But those other issues are a problem. What people need to realize is you don't abandon your principles by working out a practical plan. You don't stop being pro-life because you're going to abandon the national stage for a solution. In fact, you'd be an idiot to stay there 40 years with a party that states that it's pro-life and not a damn thing has gotten done. There's a problem with the strategy. Don't abandon your principle, but focus on a different way of making it happen. You know,
yep.
Foreign policy. You know, Ron Paul's foreign policy is kooky. Ron Paul's foreign policy resembles that of the Republican Party for most of its incarnation. Okay? And it resembles the one of the Constitution Party very closely and also the Libertarian Party. And the fact is that it resembles Reagan. Peace through strength. Be ready to kick everybody's ass, but don't go around the world doing it when it doesn't really involve you. Let them work out their own shit. Okay, we can't afford it, and you shouldn't be putting the lives of young men and women, I'm so proud of our troops for defending our freedom. Well, you know what? I think that our troops should defend our freedom. But frankly, going to kill Iraqis or arming, you know, Al-Qaeda, who's supposedly our enemy in Syria, that's not defending our freedom. You're just putting their lives at risk for stupid reasons. So, you know, really start looking at these principles and the framework of the Constitution. And when it comes to immigration, you know, obviously Gary Johnson and Charles, who was graciously called it earlier, are for open borders. And guess what? I would more or less be for open borders too, provided that there wasn't a welfare gravy train for people to come rape and pillage. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But there is. So we got to kind of close that border. And the other issue is, when 25% of your own people don't have jobs, you don't need to be bringing in more people to work. Now, if we had, yep. 3% unemployment and there wasn't a welfare system, hey, come on in. Because the only people who would come here are those that are A, invited, or B, that actually want to be Americans as opposed to come leech off the system. So, you know, these issues have to be taken.
A temporary work role to fill, yeah.
Right, exactly. So these things need to be taken in context, and we need to have these conversations on first principles within the framework of the Constitution. So quit beating up on each other over this crap. It's not about you being right or you know, like all those fools in the primaries who went out, well, I got to vote for Romney, he's the one. I mean, if you don't like him, why would you go vote for him? Just so that you can say I voted for the winning team? I mean, what kind of fucking stupid logic is that? I mean, you know, go vote your principles. It's just so stupid. Well, Romney's the guy, so he's inevitable. So I have to go vote for him. So you don't like him, and you're stupid enough to vote for him twice? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. So people really need to stop picking these fights just so that they can be right, or so that they can be on the winning team, and start working on principles and realizing that you can be right till you're blue in the face. Okay, but if you can't get along with others in a plural Republican small r system, your ideas are never going to see the light of day. It's a plural society. So, don't start capitulating on this and that. Don't sell your principles. But build coalitions based on commonality. And start with your own heart, because it's your lust to dominate that is giving these other bastards who want to dominate the country the power. Because we're sitting down here in the trenches beating up on each other, and they're just laughing their asses off at all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think one of the things that has to be talked about, Rex, is what would that look like? I mean, I can tell you through the years there have been a plethora of organizations that wanted to come along and be the big tent organization. And, the problem is, a big tent organization is not going to work, because then it just becomes another Republican or Democrat party. But what people have to understand is what it's going to take to create these quote unquote coalitions. A coalition. See, what people don't understand, these coalition forces that are fighting all over the place, none of them are giving up their sovereignty to their nation. They are working together as a coalition force, but they, our troops still falls under our commander in chief. And that's what people don't understand, is how that is going to come into effect and how to work that in such a way that, you don't have to give up your command and control, but you have to understand how this is going to work. And I think that's where we at the national levels need to have these conversations, have a coalition conference, and to start talking about how we go about that. Now, like, for instance, when I was running for the U.S. Senate in 2010, I didn't make it. guess what? I threw all of my support, all of my endorsements and everything behind the Libertarian, and I could do that because the guy was pro-life and I wasn't violating one of my principles. So, you know, we have to understand how these coalitions are going to work.
Yeah, I agree. And again, it's not about building up any particular party, you know, and like we've said multiple times, we can have multiple parties. But we have to agree on principles of governance, principles that things that are not allowed. There should never be a discussion in this country about whether it's okay for the president to have a secret kill list or not. It's not okay. It's not constitutional.
Yeah.
It's not moral.
When did that come up on the menu?
How the hell are we having this conversation? We're having this conversation because we're down here beating the crap out of each other over all sorts of other stupid crap, and they just got it done. It's that simple. You know, we got to learn to look. This isn't, you know, normal run-of-the-mill stuff. Okay, we are, if not already there, we're pretty damn near an existential threat. And when I say that, we are pretty damn. I mean, we're going to face an economic collapse sometime soon, and we'll see how that shakes out. But when I say existential threat, we're very damn close to forgetting who we are, who our founding fathers allowed us to be. Okay, and once you lose that, it'll take multiple generations to get it back. That's how serious this is. So when that's the situation, when you're facing that kind of existential threat, then you stop talking about there's a civil war in the GOP or, you know, I don't know if the COLA adjustment should be 1.7 or 1.9%. Who gives a shit? We're talking about whether we're going to be a constitutional republic or whether we're going to be a police state. And the structure is already there. The only thing stopping it is that not enough people have quietly acquiesced to it yet. Yeah. One more Sandy Hook, one more psycho cop, you know, which I don't believe for a second this guy's a psycho cop. It smells like a false flag. And people will be like, okay, you know what? For safety's sake, we're going to have to give up our liberties. And that's how you end up a prisoner. All right, we've gotten overtime pretty significantly, so I'm going to throw it to Randy for final thoughts, and Chris, even though you just gave us your first thoughts, to you for final thoughts, too.
Hey, gentlemen, I just really want to tell you I appreciate everything that you're doing. You know, like we all said, there's quite a few times we don't necessarily see eye to eye, but I think, you know, we are absolutely focused on the idea that there is a duopoly. It needs to be destroyed, and we've got a lot of work ahead of us, and I appreciate that the fact that you guys are having the conversation. One little piece of and I know you guys won't mind, so I am on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Central holding a new blog talk radio kind of show. It's the Constitution Party Talk Radio. I'm interviewing Constitution Party people and having conversations about the party. So you all are welcome to call in and participate. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, Randy. And
thanks a lot, Randy.
That's on Blog Talk Radio, so everybody check that out. You can do a search in BTR for it, or you can go to Randy's page, which is Constitutional Evangelist, correct?
Correct. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Randy. Trog, why don't you give us your thoughts, and then it's going to go to my illustrious co-host, Tex, for final thoughts, and then I'll bring it home.
You know, there's a couple examples of exactly how it works. Look at the Tea Party. The Tea Party focused on taxes, you know, restraining federal government, you know, state sovereignty. It just focused on some really primary issues, and millions and millions and millions of people came together. And they came out of, maybe they were primarily, you know, more conservatives and whatever, but they came together very quickly, and it was a firestorm, and it created a lot of success. And there was something else that just happened recently that shows that people can work together who may not be exactly on with each other on all their issues and their politics. That was the gun issue. You know, it was amazing how quickly people got up, you know, when that tangible reality of they're coming for our flipping guns, you know, they're going to use this shooting in Connecticut, and you could just see, you know, you could just see the whole tone of the national media, everything else like that. People were able to focus. And it wasn't, they didn't look at him and go, well, are you a Republican or are you a Christian? Because I don't know if I want to go to this rally if you don't fit my perfect scenario. You follow what I'm getting at? That is an example of people working together that may have some differences, could be, you know, from religion to no religion to whatever, but they rose up and the battle began. People fought together against the government, you know, coming after their Second Amendment rights. It can work, but it's almost, you have to find the things that people agree on. The problem with conservatives and libertarians and all the rest of them, you know, in this group of people, is they spend too much time looking at the differences. That's the problem. And it is amazing to me, watching conversations on the group, and even listening a little bit tonight, I see this all the time. We're always trying to find the differences instead of finding the common ground. Because if we don't come together to win, then those things that are important to you ain't going to get fixed anyway. So might as well just give it up. That's my input.
Well, before you go, you need to do a plug, at least for general purposes.
Oh, on the radio show?
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, Coalition of Freedom. I'm going to do one tomorrow night. It'll be 10 p.m. Eastern time, maybe earlier. You know, it gets posted on the groups. And, you know, I've just been massive research and input, and that's probably why I haven't sat down and done one recently. But I'm definitely back on it. So, Coalition of Freedom, Blog Talk Radio, you just type it in the search bar, yeah, come to the group, you know, because we post, I don't know, who knows, 100, 150 different groups get the information. So if you're on those groups, you'll see, you know, the show gets posted. And we take on the tough ones.
Sounds good. All right.
All right,
thanks, Chris. We'll see you tomorrow night. All right, Tex, you want to close this out for us,
certainly.
And then, yeah.
Well, we've kind of ranged all around tonight, but, you know, to bring it back home to where we started, I think a lot of Republican voters are lost in the wilderness at the moment. They don't know what's next, and the thing is that the people who screwed us over last time are manning the guns right now, and they're trying to stop conservative candidates from showing up in 2014 already today, and they're going after conservatives before they even announce their candidacies in order to ridicule them and prevent them from even running or attempting to run so that they can get an early crop of their rhino candidates through. And one of the things that we have to do is make sure that we stand up against that movement and stop it. And one of the things I noticed is, you know, what disappointed us a lot back in 2012 was that, you know, quote, conservative talk radio turned against the conservative movement this time around and went and they embraced the whole, you know, Mitt Romney loser train. And in this most recent fight, interestingly enough, Mark Levin is one of the people who signed a letter from Brett Rozelle's Media Research Center calling for Karl Rove's minion. I believe he's the media spokesman. His last name starts with a C, and I'm going to forget what it is, but who called Brett Lozell a hater and all this other kind of stuff. But
Collegio.
Collegio, that's what it was. I was thinking colleague the whole time. But, yeah, Collegio. And so calling for his resignation because they said an apology won't do. But it looks like part of talk radio, at least, is taking this up. So that is at least something. Some of the media is still on our side. But, you know, we have to stand against the concept that the successful path forward for the Republican Party is going to be to become a Rhino Party or the Democrat Light Party, because that will surely kill it. And if you can win that fight, then you know, you've got at least a victory under your belt, and we can start talking about these other things. But, you know, at the moment, I'll be honest, I'm under no illusion or not operating with some sort of sense that the Republican Party is going to suddenly see the light and that it will be savable. But something will come along and we will find a way out of the doldrums that the conservative movement seems to be in today. And I think the way that happens is through building coalitions, as we talked about on the show.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I think that people need to realize that, you know, whether you want to be a Republican or not, it is important for the Republican Party to actually be conservative and follow the Constitution, because those other guys are so far from that, that if you collapse the Republican Party and you think, oh, some third party will come fill the vacuum, no, because if the Republican Party collapses, and frankly, it's already sunk, until you get rid of Roe, Priebus, Boehner, and change these rules, this thing will never be conservative. But if it truly collapses, and then the rank-and-file people that don't pay attention to politics as much, you know, realize it's gone, it's going to be like herding cats to get them to one other party. So you're going to have all these parties that are picking up the majority of the vote, but not a single one of them is going to get more votes than the Democrats, and you will see a 20- or 40-year reign of Democrat-socialist ascendancy. So it is important to try to save the Republican Party, at least on the national level, while you work with whatever the best local options you have and open up ballot access. This is very important. Just like we talk about, Tex at the very beginning was talking about how the Founding Fathers gave us a system where they use power to check power. Well, if you want to check, you know, party to check party, you got to have more than two. So it's about opening up that those ballots and about real fair voting and getting rid of these electronic machines, and you're going to have to do that on the local level. But you can't get anything done unless you have agreement. And what we've been talking about today is that this lust for power, this libido dominandi for you to always be right and have your way, is not the way it works in a plural society with a Republican small r form of government. But there are certain principles that you agree upon. Okay, we agree on the diffusion of power, on the federal structure, on the fact that the U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land, not the Supreme Court. We agree on the fact that we have certain principles we believe in as Americans: free markets, no corporatist, you know, crony capitalism, no socialism. We believe in smaller government, not no government, even though some of us might be anarchists. It's a far cry, and I think even most anarchists and minarchists will say, hey, you know what, I'll take something close to libertarianism, you know, will be acceptable, and we'll work forward on that thing. So you're going to have to realize that, find these big principles where we can get agreement, start working together, and if we can truly restore the republic and constitutional government, then let's beat the crap out of each other to get our way then. But if you do it now, you will never have a voice, because the corporatists are in charge. The Federal Reserve and the cronies on Wall Street already own both parties. There is no dissent. There is no voice. They own 96% of the media. So it's an absolute losing battle if you stay divided. So look into your heart. Figure out whether, you know, it's through your faith and your religion, or you have some kind of meditative practice or psychological analysis, whatever it is, but look into your heart and figure out what it is that drives you to want to dominate others as opposed to working together for principles of truth and liberty. You don't have to be right on everything. You don't have to get every single one of your issues to be agreed upon by everybody. But let's find those things that check the federal leviathan and the corporatist control of our government, that force a duopolistic false choice on us every 2 and 4 years. And let's start really having freedom and liberty as our founding fathers intended in this country. It is up to you, because if you're listening to this show, you're probably somewhat involved. You got to go deeper. I hate to put the burden on your shoulders, but you're hearing my voice. You're listening to Texan Rex. So it's up to you. And what it's up to you to do is not only act, but figure out what else you can do and do more and get more people involved. Anybody who tells you that they're not interested in politics is either an absolute idiot or a friggin' liar, because the fact is that politics is absolutely interested in every aspect of your life, and you can't sit back and not participate. You don't have a choice. It affects everything. And so you're going to have to be involved. Blessed Archbishop Fulton Sheen said, "The refusal to take sides on great moral issues is itself a decision." And make no bones about it, we are talking about moral issues. Liberty and the Constitution are moral issues. It is a silent acquiescence to evil. The tragedy of our time is that those who still believe in honesty lack fire and conviction, while those who believe in dishonesty are full of passionate conviction. You've been sitting back, watching TV, feeding your kids, going to work, running your business. These are all important things. Well, maybe not watching TV. But they have been actively working in a very organized manner to undermine your culture, to undermine your politics, to undermine your Constitution, to undermine your republic. And it will be checkmate pretty damn soon if you don't stand in that breach. Now, I know that Tex is in that breach, and I'm in that breach, and many others like Randy and Chris, Charles from earlier, and many of you listeners are in that breach. We need more. I'll stand in this breach even if I'm the only one. But we need more people with fire and conviction who are willing to do these things because it is important. And don't think for a second that all the little stuff you have at home or your contentment that you were right and you won an argument with another libtard is going to make a hell of amount to anything or make any difference if this thing collapses because you didn't do what you were supposed to do. Get more people involved, get more people active, and do the right things on the larger principles where we can agree. And in the coming shows, we're going to talk about what those things are. We're going to dig into the issues. We're going to expose Karl Rove. We're going to expose these people that have taken over the Republican Party. We're going to bring people on who can tell you what you can do locally to affect change, like what's going on in the Commonwealth of Virginia here, where we just lowered the required votes to get on the ballot by half, which would have meant that in the last primary would have at least had Santorum and Gingrich along with Paul and Romney in the Republican Party. These are the kind of improvements that need to be made, and it is up to you to do it. We'll be back next Sunday. In the meantime, you can follow the show on Blog Talk Radio by clicking follow under the show icon. You can like our Facebook page. That is the Tex and Rex Show on Facebook, and you will get notifications in your news feed as to when we are broadcasting. And we'll also post some of the articles and clips and such things that we use on there as well. So we look forward to seeing you next week. Be happy that you are alive and here now. It is a privilege and an honor to be here to defend liberty at this particular time. Don't sit back. Do something for liberty today. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
Flames of liberty will never die.
Say they know me though, cause I'll be putting in work. Commit my life to reverse, well respected, cause that's my word.